I'm Efwa Hirsch. Thank you for downloading this edition of The Why Factor from the BBC, a programme that seeks to find out why we do the things we do.
Dr. Diane Riney, could you join us?
Good evening. Well, I had a really well-prepared talk for you, and some of it I will throw in the bin.
All of a sudden, I didn't feel like I knew my job. You know, I felt like, oh my God, people, why are people coming to listen to me? And I was doing a speaking engagement.
Have you ever had the feeling you're about to be unmasked? You feel out of your depth, less talented or less qualified than the people around you.
I was utterly convinced that I was fooling them, that they just didn't know how incompetent I was. They didn't know how anxious I was. They didn't know how bad it was, that I was just fooling them all.
And you're terrified that at any moment, someone will discover your shameful secret.
I could tell that everybody in the room, or at least in my head, I felt like everybody in the room was looking at me like, who is this kid? There's no way we're giving him this money.
Someone will tell the world that you're a fraud and that you don't belong there. I remember the first time I had that feeling. It was a picturesque, frosty October, and I just arrived at Oxford University, away from home for the first time. Everyone seemed to know each other, and the special lingo, BOPs, matriculation, collections, words I had never heard before. They were so much smarter and self-confident than I was. As a black woman, I looked different to almost everyone around me too. I was convinced that I didn't belong there, and someone had made a terrible mistake by letting me in. And terrified that mistake would be discovered, I kept my fears quiet, hoping I would never be found out. This is The Why Factor on the BBC World Service. I'm Efwa Hirsch, and this week I'm finding out about something called imposter syndrome. What is it? Who experiences it? And why?
Well, I would say I had imposter syndrome probably about a year or two into my career. Started to manifest self-doubt in myself. So it was a very difficult time because I honestly didn't believe that I would be able to reach a certain point in my career where I had, you know, real achievements and being able to get the work done. I had a lot of self-doubt on each piece of work that I did.
Alexis Hancock is a senior web developer in Silicon Valley. She's been working in the tech industry for 5 years and has taken on many roles, including software engineer and technology consultant.
I came into the field with such confidence in terms of being able to try new things and learn new things.
It's very hard to find a good woman ski instructor. There aren't many, like, especially at kind of the different levels of ski instructing.
Kate's also in the tech industry. She has worked as a software engineer in Canada, Australia, and the UK. And she finds the time to teach skiing in between leading a software app team. Although the scenery on the slopes is different to that of the office, Kate says there isn't a big difference in the way she feels in the two environments.
There was a point where I was on a team where there were more men named Ken than women. So we talk about like the Dave to women ratio, yeah. But when you start getting into like
Kens,
progressively less common names, yeah, you know, things are really bad. Yeah, I think if you're in a situation where you look around and there are not many people that look like you, it's easy to kind of wonder why that might be the case. And if things don't go well, if you like feel less confident for whatever reason, then I think kind of that feeling of not belonging and being other can definitely kind of feed into that.
Alexis and Kate are two people who claim that they suffer from imposter syndrome very similar to the feelings I had back at university. Dr. Valerie Young is an expert on the subject and an author of imposter self-help books.
It was two psychologists in the late 1970s, Dr. Pauline Clance and Dr. Suzanne Imes, who first coined the term the imposter phenomenon, as it is more accurately known in the world of psychology. And they found in their research at a university in Georgia despite overwhelming, compelling evidence to the contrary, a lot of perfectly intelligent, capable, competent people have a really hard time internalizing or really owning their achievements. And instead, they discount them or diminish them and kind of chalk them up to things like luck, timing, connections. They just like me. Computer error. I've heard some very creative excuses for success over the years. But the persistent fear then is going to be that sooner or later, you're going to be found out.
Clance and Imes first identified imposter syndrome during the 1970s, during the second wave of feminism. The women's rights movement had made significant progress in areas of education, politics, and the workplace.
It's actually one of the very few psychological issues that was first thought to be specific to one gender, in this case women, and they were seeing all these very high-achieving women experiencing these, and talking about these feelings of fraudulence and feeling undeserving of their success.
Not long after Clance and Imes described imposter syndrome, researchers found that it was not exclusive to women. Men also experienced the fear of being frauds.
There are many, many men who feel like imposters.
24-year-old Alex Price is the founding managing director of a digital agency, 93 Digital. He started the agency in his bedroom at the age of 16. Now he manages 15 people in an office based in central London. Even with all his success, he sometimes questions whether he is right for the job.
The most common scenario is when I'm walking into a meeting or a new business environment, and you can quite clearly see on people's faces when they come out to meet you in reception and they've had an email exchange with someone that's a founder and managing director, and they're probably expecting someone in their 50s with some grey hair, and they're greeted by quite a young-looking face. And it's interesting, you can quite literally see it on their face. Sometimes it's kind of a surprised look as they look around their lobby for someone else that's not me.
I don't want to be too personal, but you are a young man. You're dressed in casual, trendy clothes. You've got cool glasses on. In my mind, when I think about kind of tech entrepreneurs, I actually see someone more like you than an older person in a suit. Do you think that as things are changing, would that reduce the sense of being an imposter for someone like you?
I think so, yeah. Again, I'm lucky that in this industry, there is, I guess, a relatively young age across it. Technology generally, I guess I'm more on the kind of services side of the industry. And so we're trying to build trust and we're trying to come across as a safe pair of hands. And so that somewhat contradicts being young.
So what story stands out?
Is a piece of new business, which ultimately we ended up winning. It was for our largest piece of work yet. It was a six-figure piece of work. We went to meet the client on loads of occasions. It was actually just me that went to all of those meetings. I had a room full of sometimes 10, 12 people all sitting around tables, just watching and kind of waiting for your every word. I could tell that everybody in the room, or at least in my head, I felt like everybody in the room was looking at me like, who is this kid? There's no way we're giving him this money. And yeah, ultimately, we actually ended up losing it the first time around.
We're seeing a lot more millennials, and particularly millennial young men, write about imposter feelings. And partly, I think, you know, millennials are more open to laying their feelings out there.
It's a job that you will usually find women in Kenya doing. But in a small nail bar 16 kilometres from Nairobi, 23-year-old owner Cyril Umbula is tending to a customer's nails. Despite his passion for working in the nail industry, Cyril questioned his legitimacy and his skills as a man in an all-female world.
When I first started doing nails myself, it wasn't easy because myself I was scared too, because I never knew how people would react towards the occupation. My parents, first and foremost, they never accepted what I do. So it wasn't easy for me to tell them. They wanted me to change another occupation, and they were willing to pay school and for me to do another course. I thought maybe I'm not in the right career and stuff, but because it was my passion, I just went for it. I just went for it. Being a nail technician, even most of men now I've started joining the occupation. So as time went by, I gained my confidence, I gained the skills, and I was able to tell people what I do.
It was actually the hardest article I've ever written.
What if you do not identify with a gender? Shivani Set is a social worker and librarian in the United States. She identifies as genderqueer, which means she doesn't subscribe to either male or female. Shivani channels her unique identity into writing. One of her most popular articles is titled, Am I an Imposter or Am I Oppressed? And here's the irony. Imposter syndrome struck as she was writing this.
I was just sitting there being like, why? And I'm like, because what I'm trying to avoid doing is talking about how much this affects my life. What I'm trying to avoid doing is sharing that this is something I'm literally battling as I write the article. I need to talk about the fact that even putting my voice out into the world is a effort, that I have to battle this idea that my voice is even needed, worthwhile, interesting, valuable. I had 1,000 people telling me, you know, that I had talent, that I was capable, that I just needed to keep working at it. But I was convinced somewhere inside me that there was something wrong, that there was something flawed, and that the reason I couldn't do these things as easily as I thought everybody else was doing them was because there was something wrong with me. I was utterly convinced that I was fooling them, that they just didn't know how incompetent I was. They didn't know how anxious I was. They didn't know how bad it was, that I was just fooling them all. And that feeling persisted for years.
She says her feelings of being an imposter started as a child. There were only 5 Indian families, including hers, in the entire city of Bismarck, North Dakota, where she grew up. She and her brother were the only children of Indian descent at her school.
A group of students had found out I was Hindu and I wasn't Christian, and they became panicked at this idea that I would somehow go to hell. And so they clustered around me and feverishly started trying to teach me the 10 Commandments because I didn't know them, because I wasn't Christian. And that's my first really vivid memory of realizing that I wasn't like everyone else and that other people really had a lot of intense feelings about that.
And how did that affect you?
It's been a sore spot for a long time. That wasn't the first time my religion came up. Second graders knew enough to be frightened of my difference. And their parents had taught them enough to say that there was something they had to do to correct that difference. Otherwise, something horrible would happen to me. And it's just this very clear memory I always tell people about, because we were 8, 7, and everybody knew, like, that somehow there was something sort of different about me and that that difference was somehow threatening. And that's sort of where imposter syndrome and othering really came together. Is it started with this idea that people were telling me there was something wrong with the fact that I was different, and it morphed into there must be something wrong with me.
Dr. Diane Riney is a psychologist and the founder of Strength Within Me, a foundation that tackles domestic abuse. She also runs a PR company that specializes in diversity marketing and race relations in the UK.
I know I've always been told as a black woman that I always have to work 10 times harder than my Caucasian counterpart. And so already you've kind of got that self-doubt because you know you've got to work harder. And statistics show bear that out. Women of colour are not as visible in the corporate space in a number of key positions. So I think if that's already the status quo, unfortunately, you are going to feel less confident.
Is it possible that imposter syndrome is another way to describe the lack of self-confidence?
It can be a number of elements about what's going on, but it's just that feeling of not feeling good enough. So for me, it goes back to basics. It's all about your inner confidence. It's all about your own self-belief. And if that's been knocked, I would say I'm a very confident woman, but I've suffered from imposter syndrome 7, 8 years ago when I was going through a really bad time when my confidence had been severely knocked. All of a sudden, I didn't feel like I knew my job. I felt like, oh my God, people, why are people coming to listen to me? And I was doing a speaking engagement. It depends on what's going on in your life. One of my twins, she was going for a part for a theatre production. And already she was saying that I'm not going to get the part. And I said, why is that? She said, well, we don't see many people who look like us on TV and stuff. So already she's got that self-doubt. And, you know, she comes from a family which is confident. You know, you can do anything. And, you know, colour, gender, nothing will define you. But she already at 9 feels that and she's conscious of it.
Researchers have found that imposter syndrome is a separate phenomenon from anxiety or low self-esteem. But some studies have been able to see a connection between the two.
It's possible to have a healthy sense of self-esteem and still have imposter feelings. And also I want to add, imposter feelings are very specific to achievement arenas, to work, school, career. When you walk into a classroom or a meeting, a given field, organization, or the executive level in an organization, the more people who look like you or perhaps sound like you, you know, the more confident you're going to feel. And conversely, the fewer people who look like you, you know, it can and does impact your level of confidence. And that's all the more true if you belong to a group for whom there are stereotypes about competence.
In the late 1970s, the rise of feminism altered the role of women in society. But the world of work was still dominated by men. Women today are rejecting any barriers set against them and are voicing their concerns about attitudes in the workplace.
I really got tired of like this word, this phrase imposter syndrome as just a catch-all for like, oh, you're a woman without much confidence, you must have imposter syndrome. If I think about the worst manager I ever had, he believed that by never giving me positive feedback, he was training me not to need it. And so working in that environment, you know, I started to feel like smaller and smaller and, you know, much less capable and like to really question whether I could ever be successful in that environment when, you know, it just really felt like whatever I did, it was never going to be considered good. And, you know, so I think somebody could look at me in that situation and say, oh, well, look, she has imposter syndrome. I think overt discrimination is holding women back. And some of that gets labeled as imposter syndrome.
A lot of people tell women to ask for more, be more direct, be more aggressive, be like the men in your field. And you end up doing those things and realizing that you don't see the same results. For instance, a lot of people told me to like, oh, well, you get paid less, ask for more money. I have been interviewed by other companies in the past who asked for what I want, and they would try to strike me down about maybe 20, 30K below what I asked. And so women are doing these things, you know, women are trying to be more aggressive despite the external factors that keep holding them back. It became clear at a moment where things were happening because of certain factors, and I do honestly believe those factors because I was a woman and I was a Black woman. And a lot of them for the first time was their first time working with a Black woman.
Imposter feelings are complex, and there are almost as many different causes as there are individuals who've experienced them. Hearing so many personal experiences has really made me reflect on the younger me, that bright, cold autumn as a fresher at university. I think if I'd have even known the name for what I was experiencing, let alone how common imposter syndrome is, it would have really helped me. But is there a way of completely overcoming it?
The advice I would give other people and what I did last year to overcome it more was to finally trust myself and let myself mess up and realize that even though something on the job may happen with me, and if I make a mistake and be interpreted and blown up, I should know the scale of that mistake should not be seen as an indictment on my skills and my skill set. It should be seen as a human error that can happen.
Actually, when you start to lay it out, I did at that time when I was going through, I did like a checklist. Qualified? Yes. Have I done this? Yes. How many projects have I worked on? Yes. How many projects were successful? 9 out of 10. Then you start thinking, actually, why am I suffering from this? Because when you actually start to write things down and visualize it, you're as good as anybody else. It's about telling yourself every day that it's possible. It's about telling yourself, I love me. It's telling yourself you can. It's, if you do feel that, trying to work out, well, where did that first start? When did I start having these self-doubts and addressing them? I think the hardest thing is identifying it.
Number one is to normalize imposter feelings. This is why I always have to break it to my audiences that they're not special. That 70% of people, you know, they according to one study many years ago, 70% of people have had these feelings at one time or another. as we talk about imposter feelings, I want to encourage people to not talk about them in a confessional, kind of shameful way, but to talk about them in a very normalizing way, going, oh, my God, I had such an imposter moment in that interview with the BBC, right? And to just kind of name it and in an offhanded kind of way. You know, managers, professors, talk about it in an offhanded kind of way. People who don't feel like imposters are no more intelligent or capable or competent than those who do. The only difference is that they think different thoughts. In that same scenario, a job interview, a presentation, a promotion that will cause someone to feel like an imposter, they're thinking different thoughts, which is really good news because it means all we have to do is to learn how to think like a non-imposter.
There's a lot of digging you have to do into those old, old hurt places with imposter syndrome, especially, I think, as a minority. As a marginalized person, there are so many things that have been said of your life that are sort of like scar tissue. And then you have to work the muscles around the scar tissue.
One thing that really made a big impression on Shivani was during her time at Smith Graduate School. She attended a networking event for students of color. Until this day, she remembers what her mentor, Adrienne Martin, said.
She came up to the podium and she said, we always have students who think that they're not supposed to be here, who think that they've fooled us, that they've squeaked by somehow, that we've brought them in as a diversity checkmark. And she said, you are supposed to be here. We chose you. We chose you for a reason. You are supposed to be here. And for me, that was a very important moment because she was speaking to the fact that she fully expected that someone in there was going to feel that way. And she just normalized it. And that was really healing.
What everyone wants is to stop feeling like an imposter, but feelings are the last to change. So if you want to stop feeling like an imposter, you have to stop thinking like an imposter and think very differently about failure and competence and for that matter, about fear.
I'm Afua Hirsch, and you've been listening to The Why Factor. The producer was Priscilla Nyethe. You can listen again to this programme on the website and hear other Why Factors on what do you do and why words matter. We'd love to hear your ideas for future topics. Email us, whyfactor@bbc.com.
One of the greatest authors and poet of our time, Maya Angelou, wrote 11 acclaimed books in her lifetime. Yet she once admitted, I have written 11 books, but each time I think, oh, they're going to find out now. I run a game on everybody and they're going to find me out. If somebody like Maya Angelou suffered from imposter syndrome, any one of us can, because it's not about that you're not good enough. It's all about what you think and what's going on for you.
Now, just a quick word about the final edition of our podcast series, 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy, also from the BBC World Service. After telling us all about the original list of 50 things, it's now unveiled the 51st thing, as voted on and chosen by listeners. The shortlist was the credit card, glass, the global positioning system, irrigation, the pencil, and the spreadsheet. Find out about what won by searching for 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy, wherever you find your podcasts.